Sunday. It's a little rainy, so stay in, huddle up under the covers, grab a cup of coffee, and listen to us for 2 hours. Welcome to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. We are KCNR 1460. Now, if you want to listen to us, go to readingteaparty.com, click on the radio show link, and that'll take you right to where you need to go. You can call, you can chat, and we stream live. So this morning, I want to give a quick shout-out to our sponsors of We the People, our very good friend Damsel. We've got North State Consultants, our tax guy, Mark Kent, located on Cypress Avenue, and his telephone number is 221-0101. And we've got Jim and Nancy Myatt from All Temp Tactical Lube. And we'll get a little more detail on those folks a little later in the show. Just wanted to let you know that they're great patriots and great sponsors of our show. And for those of you that don't know, don't forget that every Monday night at 6 o'clock, we meet at the Bonneville Baptist Church. Tomorrow night, we've got Les Baugh, our supervisor from District 5 for Shasta County. He's going to come and talk to us about all things county-related.
There's a ton of stuff we can do working with the county. People out there are often frustrated with government and what's going on, and looking to try to make some changes, and we're making some changes, and moving our microphones around. So if you were thinking Elizabeth sounded like she was in a closet, she'll be fixed in a minute.
I'm not in the closet.
And
I
that
swear.
Squeaking sound, by the way, is not us. We're not that old.
Yeah, not there yet.
Go.
Anyway,
there you go. Try that.
I oiled all my joints this morning.
There, how's that? Better.
Oh yeah, that's a lot better. Much better.
Having little
a very special thank you to our engineer magician Chandler.
We're having a little microphone rodeo here. We're just switching them around. So this morning we're going to talk about a little departure from our typical private property rights stuff, and not a super big departure, but in the Tea Party we try to focus on limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution, and things that fall under that umbrella. And we stay away from the social issues, not because we don't care about them, but because it further divides. And anybody who's followed politics in the last few years knows we don't need any more division. But this morning, we're having Karen England on from the Capital Resource Institute. Their mission is to educate and strengthen families. And we do that I'm reading from her website. She says, and we do that by working to influence public policy. It's imperative that citizens join with us and stay up to speed on current legislation affecting family values. So when you start hearing that little kids in elementary school are getting some sort of bizarre graphic sex education as a part of the law, Karen's organization is the one that tracks those things and pushes back on them. She'll tell you when she gives us a call here in a few minutes, but she was a stay-home mom, a homeschooling mom, and thought, what the heck is going on? And now she does a really great workshop called Lobbying from Your Kitchen Table.
Awesome.
So you don't have to be, some high-powered...
Yes, super doable.
Yeah, complicated lobbyist person. It's basically standing up for the values that you think are important. She's also going to be in Reading speaking at the end of February, so watch the meeting schedule for that.
And I highly recommend
she's
coming.
Hilarious.
Yeah, you've got to come see her, because this woman will have you rolling in the aisle laughing so hard. She's absolutely hilarious. I'm pretty sure stand-up could be her second job, so definitely worth hearing. So she delivers a great message in a way that's very receptive.
And they're extremely effective, because when legislators are on the wrong side of the line on a lot of these issues, and there's Karen now calling us, when they're on the wrong side of the line and they hear that the Capital Resource Institute's coming to pay them a visit, they either, gear up for a fight, or they realize the error of their ways. But on her website, you can find that, actually, if you go to readingteaparty.com, click on radio show, and you'll see the bio for her there, and also information about capitalresource.org. But they have church resources. They do a day at the Capitol. Mark your calendar for that. That's March 15th. So if you've always been interested in going down and seeing what a lobby day looks like, and you want to go with regular people who are standing up for things you probably believe in, this is a good group to be with. And there are lots of resources on Karen's site. She also sends out really good updates, and they're the kind of updates you like to see in your inbox, because there aren't too many of them, and they're always helpful. So do we have Karen on there? Chandler?
I'm here.
Good morning, Karen.
Good Hey, good morning.
So we were telling people about your organization, but we didn't tell them about you exactly. We alluded to the fact that you got involved because you were a homeschool mom, but we thought we'd let you tell the story.
Okay, well, I was a homeschool mom, new to California. We had two kids that were in public school, but decided to homeschool our last one. And we were doing it through a charter school, and all of a sudden, the State Department wanted, this was under Delaine Easton, Superintendent of Public Instruction, at the time, and they wanted to close us down. And they said we were in violation of some law, and so I got a hold of the law, and I read it, and I, you know, was shocked that I understood it. And I was like, well, we're not violating this. This is so clear. I mean, it was one of those where it was really clear. It was just common sense. And I felt like, oh, if we just tell someone, you know, they'll be able to get the liberals to stop attacking, you know, this school. And that was my naivete. And I contacted a gentleman named Assemblyman at the time, Steve Baldwin. And it was right at the time, there was a short period of time where Republicans were in control. There was a two-year period. And he was chair of the Education Committee, and so he started to help us out, and we weren't in violation. Our school district started to actually sue the State Department of Education. They backed down, and the charter school remained open, and that, along with a few other things that were going on here locally, got me involved in politics. I realized, wow, one person can make a difference. I helped save a charter school that is still the state's largest charter school. And it was the 13th charter school in the state, so it was when charter schools are brand new. And my eyes were open to, wow, there are a lot of people out there that don't view government, don't view the role of parents, you know, things the way I do, and they're out to change the way our state operates, change the way parents raise their children, and I just couldn't stay silent. So that's kind of how I ended up getting involved and realized, wow, you don't have to have some, you know, big degree to understand a piece of legislation.
And you don't have to have some big degree to weigh in and make a difference. I was mentioning right when you called in that you guys are doing a lobby day on March 15th. I wanted you to talk about that a little bit, and then we'll talk about that in the next hour for people who maybe tune in late. But that's a great opportunity.
Well, lobby day is something going back to when I first got involved, and I attended a citizen lobby day that Concerned Women for America put on, and I was a couple of months into figuring out everything that was going on. You know, I was brand spanking new. I didn't know you could even go to the Capitol as a citizen. And so I attended a lobby day with a girlfriend of mine, and at the end of the kind of presentation, they said, okay, come up here and get your packets, and we're going to send you out. You know, there'll be a name on the packet. You go to that legislator, and you talk to them about this bill, all this training we had just done. So my girlfriend and I took our packet, and we walked out, and we looked at each other and said, we don't know what to say to a legislator. And literally, we threw our packet in the trash and went home. And the next year, I was putting lobby days on. So that kind of tells you how quickly I went from not being able to talk to, you know, scared to death, to putting on a lobby day for citizens. I understand how nerve-wracking and intimidating it can be for some people to go speak to their legislators. So this day, the Citizen Lobby Day, is crafted for everyday citizens that have never engaged in the process. Or, you know, I saw that you guys had Orlean Curla on last week. I think she's been to 10 of our lobby days. She comes to almost every single one we have and will tell you that she learns something new every time. So it's, you know, from the very first person, you know, that has never gotten engaged in the process to Orlean comes to our lobby days.
Hey, Karen, how many people generally attend?
But you literally, it's a day long, it's 9 to 4, and you really do need to be there for the majority of the day. And it's downtown, and we have the auditorium at the Secretary of State's office. And in the morning, we do the 10 Commandments of Effective Advocacy. We explain the governmental process. This March one is key because we will be unveiling all the legislation that is being introduced right now. And right now we're in the first of a two-year session, and thousands of bills are being introduced. And Capital Resource Institute actually puts out a packet of bills that we will be tracking. And we also put in a lot of bills that we think our constituents would really be interested in, and we unveil that. So everything that's being introduced right now, we will have an analysis and all sorts of information on at that lobby day, which is why we always do our kickoff lobby day in early March. It's right when committee hearings are about to start. So anyway, so you'll find out about the current bills that intrude on our lives, you know, the tax, the quote-unquote fees they want to increase, all sorts of things. Illegal immigration, there's quite a few bills on that, and we will be talking about those. We bring in some speakers, but they're not speakers designed to talk about themselves. If we do have legislators, they're not there to tell us how wonderful they are. They're there to equip you so that you can go back and be a better citizen and be better engaged in the process. And then in the afternoon, we send you out in lobby groups, and you lobby a piece of legislation. And because I don't want you throwing my packet away, we actually have citizen lobby leaders that have either volunteered, that are new, that have signed up, like Aaron. You could sign up and be one. And Elizabeth, I'd volunteer you, but I don't know you as well. So you guys could be lobby leaders and lead a group around. We usually have, like Orlean would be a lobby leader. And then I've got a lot of youth that I work with, and it's great to have them as lobby leaders, especially ones that love the Constitution, that are conservative, because they're not used to seeing youth in the building that are conservative, and so often we have lobby leaders that are youth. So that's kind of an overview, and I'm certainly open for questions about Lobby Day, but that's an overview. I will tell you, I have never had someone come up to me and say, I'm sorry that I came and I wasted the day. I've had single moms take the day off of work and tell me how glad they were that they did it. It's a one-time thing that I think everybody needs to do if they're going to be involved at all.
And then how many people usually attend this day?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you very well.
How many people generally attend this event?
Well, it goes anywhere from, our smallest was probably 40 or 50 people, up to 150, 200 people.
Good.
And so it's great to be walking the halls with lobby groups that have 15 people in them, going to, you know, into their legislators' offices, that are just everyday citizens. I mean, most times when you're at the Capitol, you see the purple shirts, the SEIU, the CTA, the nurses' union. The unions who have financial interests are up there lobbying all the time, as you know, or they'll bus in our children when our children are supposed to be learning at school. They'll bus them into quote unquote lobby, but you don't see everyday citizens that don't have, you know, it's not about their job. It's really about just loving their state. They're concerned about bills that intrude on their lives, and so, you know, you get 100 of those in the building, and that makes a statement.
Wow, that's really powerful. And it's nice to know that people can go, and if that's not been, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people who have never really been inside the Capitol except maybe when they were in the 8th grade and went on a tour. And so thinking about lobbying, but it's funny, we lobby all the time, and I heard you give a really good explanation of that down in Sacramento one time, that everything we do, we lobby for it.
I mean, oh, absolutely. I did it this morning when I said to my husband, I really could use a mocha. Could you go get me a mocha at Starbucks, which she'll be bringing in shortly.
Yeah.
And so we do it all the time. We advocate for the things we want. Kids do it. Mom, can I stay up later for American Idol? No. You negotiate. Maybe you end up saying yes to them. We advocate and lobby for things all the time. And I share this story, and she's now 21, but when my daughter was in junior high school, and this will tell you how long ago it was, because Mervyn's was actually open, and we were in Mervyn's, and we were shopping, and I kept, you know, when we have kids, we're always trying to get them to do what we want. Once they get a mind of their own, they refuse. And I was just showing her shirt, hey, sweetie, what about this? Jordan, what about this? And finally, you know, she kept saying no, and finally she just looked at me and said, Mom, would you stop lobbying me? You're not at work. Stop lobbying me. And I was like, wow. And that hit home to me. She saw I was lobbying her. I was trying to get her to buy something, to wear something she wasn't interested in, and said, you know, stop lobbying me. We do it all the time. But we get kind of nervous when it comes to government. Ooh, I can't, quote, unquote, lobby for a piece of legislation. Yes, you can. Our government was designed for that purpose. For us to weigh in on things, for us to let our elected officials know. That's all lobbying is, and you can do it from home, you can do it via the internet, you know, letters to the editor. There's all sorts of ways you can advocate, and we cover that in Lobby Day as well. It's not just about the day, it's about equipping you so you can go back and get engaged in your county supervisors or your local school board. So it's designed to be able to give you a structure and an understanding of how things work and what you can do from home. You aren't going to be able to come to Sacramento, you know, every time we have a lobby day. But I think you need to get there once. You can go home with the tools and be effective in your local community and be effective in Sacramento and Washington, but from home.
Excellent. You know, I'm fast-forwarding in my mind and thinking about a way that we could pull a caravan together or, you know, gather a bunch of people and find a way to carpool down. I would imagine you have groups that actually bus people in.
We have groups. We actually have people that fly up from Southern California every year. And sometimes it'll be groups that'll send their leaders, or maybe a couple of different churches will send. They might have a Salt and Light ministry, and they will send people, or a Republican Women Club. And I know you guys are nonpartisan. So is Capital Resource Institute. We are a 501c3. We don't advocate for any party, but I would say Republican women tend to come to our things, or Republicans in general. So they may send a couple of their legislative leaders for the Republican women. So we have people from all over come. I mean, Orlene, when she comes, they're coming from the Bay Area. So they have to leave very early in the morning with traffic. And like I said, they bring it. Sometimes they bring two carloads because they tend to bring some youth with them as well. And people do it from all over. I would really encourage you to do it. We usually charge for Lobby Day, but this Lobby Day is free as we're getting some legislative sponsors. We do have to pay for the room. We do have to pay for all the materials, and there's quite a bit of information you walk away with, quite a bit in the packet that we end up handing out. And so this one is free, and so I'd really encourage your listeners to make an attempt to come. We did a Lobby Day specifically with NorCal Tea Party last year, put it together with about 10 days, and did it at the very end of session on some of the gun bills. And it was a great experience, and it was a lot of fun, but I think it's important and I cover this, if you guys have heard me speak, I kind of cover whether or not you should say you're with the Tea Party or not. But I think it's important. Republicans are very nervous, and I think it's important that we hold their feet to the fire. And so I like the idea of having a lot of Tea Party patriots in there lobbying the Republicans and letting them know we're paying attention to what you're doing, and it is going to matter to us. We are going to spread the word if you are, you know, keeping your commitment to campaign promises. And so from that perspective, I'm really excited to be, you know, having a lot of the Tea Party attend our citizen lobby days.
Well, see, as we head into the third year of the Tea Party, I mean, some people obviously have just started, but this movement's into its third year, and there has to be a lot more relevant participation between citizens and government. Can't just stand around and protest or just be mad or just vent or all those things. If there isn't an active dialogue and we don't actively make a difference, and some of it is just like lack of information. It's funny because we're on the chat. We have Mike down in Corning, and he's saying, I'm going to tell the Corning Patriots about March 15th because they wanted to go to the Capitol at the beginning of January, because so many people don't know how government works, and at the beginning of January, there's nothing happening yet. Why don't you tell people kind of how the legislative cycle works a little bit and why maybe, you know, the beginning of January didn't have any teeth in it.
Yes, and Mike, I love your passion, and this is what I love about the Tea Party, and this is interesting, and I'm not doing this to name drop, but I was on the phone with Mark Meckler over something that I may be working with the Tea Party on, and we talked about this, and I don't say this as a criticism about the rallies and all of that. I love that energy, but we need to take that energy into action, because this idea that activity equals results, it doesn't, just because we're, you know, active all the time. And so the legislative process, Mike needs to make sure he's at this. I promise there isn't one person that will come that will say, wow, I really knew everything and I shouldn't, you know, this was a waste of time. I guarantee you that won't happen. And so the way the process works, and this is one thing, one of my 10 commandments of effective advocacy that I do a lot at different Tea Party groups, and I'll be speaking a little bit about that, Aaron, when I come up to your group in Reading, and I've adjusted some of them, and one of them that I've adjusted based on going to Tea Party meetings And again, this isn't a criticism. My goal is to equip you, and I know, you know, I've been at the same place a lot of the Tea Party groups are at, and that is understand the process. And that goes back to this whole January 1st. The passion is great, but if you show up there on January 1st or that first week and don't know what you're doing, you lose a lot of credibility. And so the way the process works, we're in the beginning of a two-year session, and it started in December, and a lot of the legislators got sworn in, and so the way it works is they're introducing bills right now, and forgive me, but I'm going to look up the exact calendar so I have the exact dates for you. They're introducing bills, and they just finished last week sending bills. When you have an idea, a bill starts with an idea, and it can come from the union. It can, Capital Resource Institute is going to be sponsoring a bill this year. I mean, it can start anywhere. And you take it then to a legislator, and you share it with a legislator. And after you share it with a legislator, they end up kind of writing it down and then sending it to what's called Ledge Council. And those are the attorneys that are supposed to check it against the Constitution, both U.S. and the California Constitution. They check it against other laws, and then they write it in legal language. And they actually, decide which codes it will affect, like, you know, will it affect the education code and where, and they send it back to the legislator. And the legislator then introduces it. But on the 18th of February, okay, well, hang on, let me back up. The last day to get things to Ledge Council has already hit. That was back on the 21st. So all the requests for, hey, I want this bill about this or that, was due to these attorneys by the 21st. So that deadline is passed. So all the bills that are going to be introduced, they've already been sent to Ledge Council. Now, a little caveat to that, some of the legislators will throw something out there not knowing the substance of what they want, but just to get a placeholder for a bill. So that all is sitting at Ledge Council. Then it comes back to the legislator, and the legislator has until February 18th to do what's called its first reading or introduction of the bill, and that's when they formally introduce it and it's signed a number. And so, for instance, I'm going to use Senator LaMalfa because I love him and he's your guy. I love him as a legislator, let me clarify. Okay. So,
thank you. We were really wondering. We were feeling the love.
No, I love his wife too. So February 18th is the day, the last day for them to introduce bills. And of course, there's always exceptions to this, but in general, this is followed. So they will be introducing things. So let's say Senator LaMalfa introduces concealed carry bill or, you know, that we can take it from state to state. Somebody introduces a bill, and it's got its first reading, and so it will be, he's a senator, so every bill he introduces will be an SB, and then it goes in chronological order. So it'll be SB, you know, we're up to, gosh, I was checking on bills yesterday, we're in the hundreds of both houses. So SB 110 would be the 110th bill introduced in the Senate. And at the same time, this calendar and these deadlines apply to the Assembly. So the Assembly is busy introducing bills. And because everything went to Ledge Council and the deadline was the 21st, which has passed, they will actually be getting a lot of stuff back from those attorneys and Ledge Council, and we'll be introducing them, like, the second and third week of February. Lots of bills you'll be hearing about a lot coming out, and in the news they'll be reporting on them, because now it's got the substance of the bill, and now they're introducing them, and they're made public. Until then, they aren't made public, you can't go look at them, they don't have a number or a name, and so they have to actually be introduced in order to do that. And so because everything was to Ledge Council on the 21st, they're finishing everything up and have to get everything to the legislators by the 18th so they can get them introduced. And so going to them and you've got an idea and a meeting with them, you know, there's really no point before this. As an example, last week we did meet and greets which is something that CRI does, especially like right now when we've got a lot of new senators and assembly members, and we literally, it's a 15-minute, here's Capital Research Institute, here's who we are, here's what we're looking at for this year legislatively, these are the issues we care about. And as we did this last week, you know, on several occasions I was asking them, well, what's on your legislative agenda? What ideas do you have that you're introducing? And I have to tell you, a lot of them are like, we're still working on that. They have things at Ledge Council so that they have a placeholder that they could even amend that bill later, but most of them didn't have their ideas yet on their bills. And even on some of the things we were talking to them on, some of these legislators, the freshmen, are so new that they're still going kind of through training with figuring out how everything works, who's who. And so it's still very new for them. So our lobby day is the perfect day because once a bill is introduced, it can't be heard in a committee for 30 days. And so if everything's being introduced that first and second week of March, or a majority of the bills, literally thousands on both sides, they won't even be having committee hearings until the 18th, you know, 21st, 22nd, 23rd of March. So we'll be unveiling the legislation right before the committee hearings on the majority of the bills start.
Wow.
And see, that was a lot. I'm sorry. I rambled on and on and on.
No. But see, this is the thing. This is where, you know, there has to be a big crossover, especially for the Tea Party groups, you know. We're always looking to make a difference, and this sounds like the stuff that people never got involved in because it's a little bit complicated. It's a little bit hard to wade into, and so without somebody to sort of take you by the hand and give you the ropes and say, here, grab on here, come with us, this is how it works. So let's say somebody wasn't super super interested in, let's say there was a bill about charter schools again. And this was somebody who really wasn't a fan of charter schools. They maybe they were more a fan of public school, and that really wasn't their thing. Lobby day would still be useful for them because it's the same process over and over, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And I do this disclaimer, and it's kind of funny. I know Sam Paredes speaks to a lot of the lobby groups, and I've been speaking to a lot of lobby groups, including I think I've done 3 different leadership trainings for some of the leaders. And there's, you guys always, and forgive me because I'm forgetting what you call it, but your 3-prong, your mission, your, I can't remember, but almost at every single meeting they go over that, and it's usually right before I speak, and it's all about fiscal stuff, and then I get up and I have to do a disclaimer. The only thing I do are social issues. I am a social conservative, and I realize the Tea Party has been very public that that isn't their thing, and it's not going to be their thing. And I'm personally not one of those that is asking them to be, like some are, and I know I'm sure you guys are aware of what I'm talking about, where some people really want the Tea Party, and I'm just happy you're engaged and involved. And I think a lot of our issues, I mean, parental rights for me is a constitutional issue, and so I think we align with the Tea Party quite a bit. So I do a disclaimer, and I say, hey, take the tools I'm giving you and apply them to your issues.
Absolutely.
I want you engaged in the process. Just because my passion are social issues doesn't mean I don't care about the other issues, doesn't mean I don't care about having good public policy and public education or other issues. And I align much more with the Tea Party than I do the Republican Party. As far as the things I believe in. And so I want people equipped and engaged. That is what my job is at CRI. Now, if you're trying to destroy our country or you believe, oh, it's a roving document, not really that interested in helping you. But outside of that, I want you engaged and working hard on the issues. And it doesn't have to be my issues. All of these issues affect our state, and I want you to go back and be effective with it. So I always do the disclaimer that, hey, here's where I'm coming from so you know, but you don't all have to come from that perspective. These tools can be translated to, property rights. But we cover property rights at CRI, too, eminent domain and all of that we cover as well. But you can transfer pretty much these tools to local city council over, you know, some issue you may be fighting. And I've shared with you that I'm happy and our organization is happy to help with some of the people when it comes to if you are engaging in something and you want us to help you walk through the process, get a hold of our office. I will help you. Our job at Capital Resource Institute, we're a resource. That is our middle name. And we exist to help people get involved in a process. And so I don't want anyone to, you know, roll their eyes. And I was getting ready to speak at one tea party, and actually accidentally the leader sent it to me instead of a different Karen, and someone was very upset because I was a social conservative, and oh, I was coming. And you know, I get that not everyone agrees with me on social issues. I know there are a lot of libertarian leaning Tea Party people. I want them engaged as well.
Well, and Karen, you know, one of the things that we do have in common with you is that you started from your kitchen, from a grassroots level, from a passion that you had for a particular issue, and that's exactly how the whole Tea Party movement started. And like you say, we don't all agree on every single issue, but we need the tools regardless of what the issue is, and that's where we're at in this movement. Now that we've gotten past the 2010 elections, it's imperative that we begin to teach our people or give them the opportunities to learn the real concrete tools that are we're going to continue to need.
Oh, absolutely. And when I speak at tea parties, I don't think, and again, those of you that know me, and Aaron's, I think, gotten to know me a little bit, I'm pretty outspoken about what I think and what I believe. And I don't think tea party, I don't think you should have a meeting without doing something. And I've been sharing that at every meeting. And I've had leaders come up to me like, oh, can I meet with you later and let's talk about how I can make my group more effective? If you just have meetings and are complaining about, you know, what's going on without having an action item when you leave, it's no different than the Republican women who go, you know, I don't belong to those groups because I don't need to sit around and complain on Saturday morning and pay $25 for it. I can do that for free or at my kitchen table. I want action. I want to equip people. We aren't going to change this if we're just complaining or just going to rallies. I think, you know, all of that stuff is legit. But you have to be engaged in the process, and you can't just complain they aren't reading the bills. You need to educate them on the bills. You just can't complain they aren't voting the right way. I mean, perfect example, I've had legislators before, actually there's a recent one where I didn't agree with a vote, and I had them say, well, somebody said, well, did you call them first? And in all honesty, I thought the person was going to vote the way I wanted them to. Had I made the phone call, it would have totally changed the vote. Because the vote will be totally different from this legislator this next session on the same bill. But I didn't engage them. I assumed they were going to vote the right way, and they didn't. And I think if we had, you know, we need to be engaged, and we have no one to blame but ourselves if we're not. This is an opportunity to figure out how it all works. So you need to take it, and if it means taking the day off of work to come to lobby day, you need to do it. Or at the very minimum, they need to come to, you know, the tea party where I'm speaking at it. And it's not me, it's the information I have, and it will help you get active at all levels of government. And I also realize, and I think I have a healthy respect for the fact that every Tea Party looks different. In Lincoln, they're very concerned about raising taxes in city council, so they're very focused on that. You guys may be more on your, you know, I don't know, property rights, or again, I don't know, but everyone takes on a different look. And I want to help each one of those groups grow and be active in whatever it is for that group.
Well, you know, Aaron and I both had the opportunity last year to hear you speak in Sacramento. Several of us from the Reading Tea Party actually went down and had the opportunity to see your presentation, and it was absolutely fabulous. We fell in love with you. And we still have some of that information that you provided, and I think that what we'll do is disseminate that to our members and encourage a lot of our Tea Party volunteers from some of the surrounding counties to come down when you speak in February, because, like you mentioned, the private property rights are pretty big up here. That's our primary issue right now.
But it's that is a key one. And we did quite a bit on, I don't know, have you guys ever had Steve Greenhut speak?
He's coming.
Yeah,
he's going to be on the radio.
Yeah, he'll be on the radio with us. And it was funny. Okay, you'll find this humorous. He said, well, it's 2 hours. I'm not really sure I can do 2 hours. was like, are you kidding me?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that heathen is going to do it on Sunday, too, so I'll give him a hard time.
Thank you.
Well, here's the funny thing, so I'll share this. Since you're going to have him, and your listeners may be aware of him if that is their issue because of his books and all of that, but our offices, we're a nonprofit that share offices with his nonprofit. So mm-hmm. I see him regularly, and it's funny because we get in these debates because I'll say something about, and we'll talk about this hopefully so that I can clarify, but I opposed Ronald Reagan Day. And so when we talk about these things, he's like, Karen, I told you, you're a closet libertarian. And I tell him, no, I am not. You're a closet Republican. And I just believe the things the Republican Party believes, and I've stayed to fight for them. Anyway, so we have this long-standing debate. Every time we have a policy, he will, you know, and I say something, he's like, see, that's libertarian. I'm like, no, it's Republican. So we have a lot of debates, and it's a lot of fun. I really like Steve. He is a wealth of information.
Yeah, we
and
had...
so, anyway, can I clarify my Ronald Reagan days?
Yes, please.
Yes, and before you do that, though, let's tie Stephen Greenhut to a book. The name of his book is called Plunder. So if people want to read up on him a little bit ahead of time, it's an easy title to remember, and it's a lot about the unions and how they've affected California.
And we did have an opportunity to hear him speak as well.
He's funny.
He came up to Reading and spoke to a lot of the business organizations. We only got a snippet, though. I think they let him speak for 30 minutes and then cut him off, so we could tell he was chomping at the bit to tell more.
Got up at 7 o'clock, and then he only got to talk for a little while. It's like, what?
So we're looking forward to the 2 hours.
So
well,
please clarify
he also,
Ronald Reagan
the way
Day.
I was familiar with him when he wrote a book on eminent domain. So he was on the forefront, and we covered eminent domain from the perspective of churches because they are closing a lot of churches down in order to seize that property because it's, you know, they're non-taxable. And so he'd had a chapter on that. So that's where I originally got to know him, and then he went to Cal Watchdog. He's hilarious, he's solid, passionate, loves his country. I tease him because he's a total libertarian, so I tease him that, you know, I like waterboarding. He thinks it's too much power for the government. So we have lots of debates over that. Ronald Reagan Day. I opposed it. Now, we didn't do anything publicly because that would have been a little bit silly. And hard to explain and articulate. Plus, it wasn't just an issue. It wasn't an issue that was a number one thing for us to oppose. And we have so many things we have to oppose. But Ronald Reagan Day. One of the things that I talk about in the Ten Commandments of Effective Advocacy is being consistent, and especially in communicating. And I believe if we are calling for smaller government and for Sacramento not to mandate education outside of, I do believe there need to be some parameters and there need to be some standards. I do believe in that, which is done, which is a little more broad based. But getting down to the point where we're mandating Harvey Milk Day and Ed Roberts Day and Ronald Reagan Day, where a whole day has to be spent on someone that they already can cover, is not the proper role of Sacramento. They don't need to be telling Reading, you have to do Harvey Milk. They don't need to be telling Reading, you have to do Ronald Reagan. You know what? Your local school board can decide that. And you know what? If you want to celebrate Ronald Reagan Day, you can go to your local school board and ask them, hey, I'd like to make sure you're covering this on his birthday. You don't need Sacramento to mandate. And now we've got Harvey Milk. Before we had, I believe it was 3 or 4 national days where we celebrated the poppy and we celebrated one of the missions and something else. Well, now we're doing Harvey Milk and Ronald Reagan and Ed Roberts, who was a disabilities advocate. Who's it going to be this year that they introduce? You know, if we believe in local control and not mandating, then we need to do it even when it's Ronald Reagan or John Wayne. And we need to be consistent in our philosophy. And so I did let Senator Runners know, and I love Senator, well, now he's
State Board of Equalization, yeah. Right?
Yes, he is. And his wife's running for his seat. And so anyway, that, you know, I did let him know that, hey, here's why I'm not going to be supporting it. And, you know, I get where you're coming from, but I just don't think it's proper role of government, and I want to be consistent.
I've always found it to be a little disturbing, for instance, that the kids get and the teachers get Martin Luther King Day off. Why they're not staying in school and learning about Martin Luther King is beyond me. So their connection to Martin Luther King is that, oh, goody, we get the day off.
Well, yeah, that's all union-driven.
What's the point?
And so that they're paid for another day off. I mean, that's really what really drove that. And so, yeah, and originally the Harvey Milk bill was a day off, originally, from, and it was, I think, can't remember, forgive me, but I don't know if it was just the schools or all of them. And then they amended it because that was, again, a huge problem. And now they're encouraged, but we all know what that means, to celebrate his accomplishments. You know, kindergarten through 12th grade. Well, I don't know that outside of San Francisco we need to, you know, his accomplishments, if it's because he was a homosexual, that isn't an accomplishment. I mean, I have no problem celebrating someone for the things they've done, but their sexual orientation isn't one of them. And the thing that's left out about Harvey Milk is he got involved in politics really as a libertarian who was a small business owner upset about regulations. I mean, he was much more libertarian and got engaged. He was not killed because of his homosexuality. There was another man killed right along with him. You know, this idea that everything just gets so skewed and so tied up in someone's personal, you know, promotion of an issue that, you know, they'll use any way to mandate that so that we all have to engage in it. And you know what? Our kids can't read and write. Why are we, you know, spending a whole day on Harvey Milk and a whole day on Ronald Reagan? Do it during history. Are we not covering Ronald Reagan and his accomplishments? I would hope we are.
Well, you know, there's a big picture, of course, when you ask that rhetorical question as to why they're not, why are we handling some things in the school system when our kids can't read and write? And you know, I think the reason for that, big picture wise, is a whole other topic and a whole other show.
Yeah.
Well, it, you know, you've said several times that you want to issue a disclaimer. You know that most Tea Parties don't talk about all these things. You know, we take a slightly different philosophy. Yep, we go with the limited government, the fiscal responsibility, and the adherence to the Constitution. But all the things that you lobby for fall under that. And we sort of take a different look at it. It's sort of like our invocation at our meetings. You know, in a lot of meetings, you know, people say, well, I'm not really comfortable with having an invocation. And our response to that is, great. You know, it happens at the beginning, so if you're about 10 minutes late, you'll miss it. And then,
yeah,
problem solved. Mm-hmm. So for people who aren't interested in these types of topics, in the school and families and parental rights and all that, then they don't have to participate in that. But it is pretty interesting to look at what's going on in that realm. There are, oh my gosh, Orlean was, she didn't have a chance to talk to our whole group about it. I'd like to have her on the radio just to talk specifically about what was going on in the Santa Rosa school system.
Oh, absolutely. She's got a lot of stories. But I have to tell you, I would argue, and I think after people hear some of the issues, and very similar to how people perceive the Tea Party, if it's based on what the media says, and there might be a hesitancy because you have some assumptions about the Tea Party, and then you find out, oh my gosh, I may be one of them. I'm sort of more like them than not like them.
I may be one of them.
I think people would be pleasantly surprised in general to find out, you know, parental rights really is a constitutional issue and is an issue that affects finances and everything else. And when we go down this road on intruding on parental rights, we're intruding on freedoms. And they are freedoms that are God-given, and the role of government is to protect those freedoms. So it really does align. I think a lot of what CRI does align with the Tea Party. I think there tends to be, and not always, but a misperception of what social conservatives believe and who we are, and so there might be a hesitancy. But it's interesting. Those of us that are consistent, I think the you know, I always throw out this thing about Ronald Reagan, and I think initially people are a little bit surprised because I think they supported it, and then they go, wow, I can't believe they really would have, you know, they opposed it. That is much more in lining with, you know, they opposed it. That is much more in lining with the Tea Party philosophy, even though I'm a social conservative. And so even the issue of abortion, and I, you know, I hope I don't lose any support, but abortion, let's find what we can agree on, and we can agree that we shouldn't be funding it. with taxpayer dollars, because even people who agree with abortion, the majority of them do not agree with public funding of it. In California, not only do we fund it, but we fund more than one in a 12-month time frame. And when we've lobbied to hold it to only one, you have to wait 12 months before we pay for a second abortion.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. We have not been able to get that
Holy
through,
cow.
And we've done
yeah,
it.
I didn't know
we've
that.
Done it every year, but we've also done it during when the Republicans were in control. Now, granted, and every life is precious to me, so. You know, it's only about 40, and I haven't gotten the numbers in the last couple of years. So it's not a huge amount, but it's also the principle of it. Are we using it as birth control, and why are we choosing to pay for it as taxpayers when we're about to go off a cliff financially? We're paying for abortions. We're actually telling people how to emancipate themselves in schools and youth in order to have it paid for by the state. And we are then going beyond that and paying for more than one in a 12-month time frame, which, okay, we're all girls. Guys, close your ears, but it's almost impossible you have to work hard to have two abortions in a 12-month time frame.
Yeah.
Because of the kind of, you know, everything that goes on and the waiting period, all of that. So that's a lot of work.
How often, how big a deal is that?
It's not a huge deal, but it's the principle. There's only numbers from 2 years ago, and there were like 42. But it's the principle. Why are we continuing to pay for that?
Exactly.
Why can't we tell them you're going to have it? And again, I'm not for paying for any of them, but you only get one, and then you're on your own, and then you got to wait, four more months because you had one. Now I'm having to do math early Sunday morning, 8 months ago. You got to wait four more months before we're going to pay for it.
And so what was
it's
the
crazy.
Deal about the emancipation? Go back to that.
Well, our office gets calls all the time about this. First of all, and this is something that I think we'll have time to talk about, but most school districts allow minors to leave for confidential medical services during the day, leave campus, come back, be marked excused so they get paid for the day, and then lie to the parents, literally keep that information from the parents. And confidential medical services, in addition to abortion, STDs, getting on the pill, is also suicide counseling and drug counseling. Often, in class, they have different people come in and let the kids know about this quote-unquote right they have. And the school district can't allow them the school district is allowed to have a policy that lets them go. The school district is also allowed to have a policy that doesn't let them leave during the school day without parents knowing. And that's something that we're encouraging people to take on at their local school level to make sure they have a parent-friendly policy that respects the rights of parents on medical decisions. Well, a lot of school districts that are letting minors go will bring in speakers and or have their school nurse or counselor talk to the groups and talk to them about how they can go during the school day and how you get around, how you get emancipated, and that Medi-Cal will pay for it. And they go through the whole process. In addition to that, they go on about how here's how you find out if your parents' insurance will let your parents, if it'll show up on your parents' insurance and let them know that you paid for it. And if it's going to show up, you just have to ask to be emancipated and Medi-Cal will pay for it, and here's how you do it. And they talk the kids through this.
Holy cow.
So your tax dollars are paying for it, and or your insurance is, but here are the insurance companies, and here's the process you go through to have them pay for it without your parents knowing or it showing up on the parents' bill.
And then we go back to the fact that so many kids are getting out of school without the basic skills that they need.
Yeah, you know what? I share this. They didn't get pregnant in English class. They don't need to take care of it during English class. Do it at 2:30, but don't involve our schools. Our parents are supposed to be able to trust our schools. Don't do it in the middle of the school day. If they want to, and some people say, some parents are high control. It's the only time they can go. Well, no. If somehow they're sneaking away to do, sneaking away from their parents to hang out with a boyfriend, they can sneak away to go to the clinic.
Absolutely.
They don't need to do it during English or math class. We're supposed to trust our teachers. We're supposed to trust our schools when we drop our kids off. We don't want them lying to us and hiding from us where our kids are in the day. That's crazy.
And so then you find out 15 years later when your child's having all sorts of problems or can't have children because of some procedure that they had done.
That you never knew about.
Yeah, during school when you had no clue.
But the school knew.
Oh, absolutely. This goes on, and I have to tell your listeners, you need to contact your local school board and find out, or your local school district, and get the policy on confidential medical services. There is no reason in your area that you couldn't get a parent-friendly policy. If they're letting those kids go, we need to immediately get that changed. Immediately, because that is something that is critical. Again, who on earth does the school think they are stepping in and making a decision over the parents on something as serious as suicide counseling or drug counseling or abortion or telling our kids, you can go get on the pill, we'll help you lie to your parents? That is not their job, and I don't want any school district doing that over my objection.
That's a little scary.
It's crazy to me.
Well, and also for our listeners, we definitely are in the process of focusing on our local school districts and getting our volunteers involved in attending school board meetings, so that is definitely on the menu.
Well, I think I shared this, but for the people that might be listening and listening from other places, as far as getting involved in the school board, and I love if they're going to meetings, but you can get the agenda sent to you, and the agendas are online. Some school districts charge to have them sent to you. Mine doesn't. But you can get the packet, and you can start looking through it so that you don't have to attend every meeting. And you don't have to, you know, it's a lot. Or there's ways that then you can split it up. But you need to, you can start getting the agendas at home. You know what? You can sit in front of, okay, I watch American Idol, but not until it starts to get good. You can
you
sit in front of
that?
American Idol and go through it, you know, and read through and look for the buzzwords. And the other thing that is really going rampant in the school districts right now is forcing the pro-homosexual curriculum on kindergarten through fifth graders without allowing parents to opt out, and they're doing it under the guise of school safety or anti-bullying. So if any of you guys out there listening have school districts that are talking about bullying, school safety, you need to really start paying attention because those are buzzwords, and I cannot tell you how many school boards are doing radical things under the guise of bullying, but in the curriculum they never mention the word bully. Like the vocabulary word is not even in there. Yet homosexual, homophobia, bisexual, this is for kindergarten through fifth graders. All of those, transsexual, those definitions are in there, but bullying and kindness, those aren't vocabulary words. I mean, it's a whole different agenda.
And parents aren't being told, so they have no clue.
Not only are they not being told, but we're working in Vallejo right now, and we've worked in Alameda. I don't know if anyone saw the Fox News special with Tucker Carlson. Do you know what is in your children's textbooks? But we had a whole 20-minute segment of that hour about Alameda. They are not allowing parents to opt out from this stuff, from really explicit movies the kids have to sit through, then discussions afterwards, and they are not allowing parents to opt their children out. You know what? That child belongs to me. And the government's supposed to protect my right to raise my children, not interfere with my raising of my child. And that's what's happening in our public schools.
Well, Orlean had said that when that was happening in her school district, she had a whole thing about it. She went in and she said, well, now you know the law requires that you have balance. So if you have day of silence,
right,
then we need to come in and have, you know, day of the opposite of that. Ooh, we're down to 1 minute. So, okay, Karen, you have 5 minutes to
drink
whatever you want. So does everybody else, because we're going to all hear some news here in a minute. And when we come back, I want to hear the Ten Commandments there. I want to go through those for people who maybe won't be there on Monday, because we have a lot of folks who will listen to this on the computer after the fact. So I want to make sure we get those out there. We're listening to Karen England from the Capital Resource Institute, and we will be back to you pretty quick here. We are listening to KCNR 1460 AM here on Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
love that song. That is the best way. I love that song. That is the best way to wake up at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. We're on KCNR 1460, Shasta Reading. Just want you folks to know, we stream live, we chat, and you can call us. And the way to get all that information is to go to readingteaparty.com, click on radio show, and everything you need to know is right there. And before we get back to Karen England, I wanted to talk a little bit about our sponsors, our very good friend Damsel, who is a secret to all but a friend to us, is a great sponsor and a great patriot of the Reading Tea Party and We the People. And I will say no more, but she knows who she is. And North State Consultants, and for those of you that tuned in last week when I was out of the area, Mark Kent sat in with Aaron and handled the show beautifully for a couple of hours. And Mark Kent has North State Consultants with his sister Linda and his wife Linda, and they do bookkeeping and notary and all kinds of things, but most importantly, your taxes. And rather than finding all kinds of ways for you to pay, they find all kinds of ways for you not to pay. The number for them is 221-0101. And then we have All Temp Tactical Lube.
Okay,
and I'm going to let Aaron. Aaron's going to cut in because she has a story about what you can do with that product.
Okay, All Temp Tactical Lube. That stuff is awesome. And so you're thinking, well, I'm not really a gun person. Okay, but you might have squeaky stuff. And for those of you that were here at the beginning of the hour when we had to do that switch around to the microphones and you heard all that squeaking. Okay, well, the microphones are moving now. No squeaking. I'm not kidding you. They're like, I don't know, they're like on glass. And Carl and Linda come in Monday morning, they're going to be super surprised. So if you have locks that are squeaky, if you have anything like that, it's just fantastic. And if you know anybody who is in the military, on a serious note, if you know anybody who's in the military, it's fantastic, and they love it over there, especially overseas. If you have an address to send to a service person overseas, Jim and Nancy Myatt have graciously offered that if you buy one bottle of All Temp Tactical Lube, and it's a 500 application bottle in this tiny little thing, they'll send two more at no cost. So you can find them on our website. Go to readingteaparty.com, click on Radio Show, and when that comes up, you'll see the ads on the right. And you can get all their information there. It's fantastic.
And rather than WD-40, it's actually small enough you can carry it around with you, as I see that you do, Aaron.
Well, no, I went and grabbed Carl's out of his
office.
Did. That's why we were all running around here. You know, to go run and go
get
it
in your purse.
No, I remember seeing it.
It's like an eye drop bottle almost.
Yeah, it's tiny.
Yeah.
But it's not silicone or any of those other materials. It's actually kind of a permanent lube. They'll never have to do these again. They'll stay the way they are. So we've been living in the land of, you don't dare move anything in here because it sounds like a haunted house. So the haunted house is gone now. Thanks, Jim Myatt, for inventing that. It was awesome.
It's pretty awesome.
So let's see. We have been chatting with Karen England from the Capital Resource Institute this morning. And just to clear up something from the last hour that we were talking to Karen about, she had said they were a 501c3 nonprofit, and we are as well. And here we are talking, you know, political talk. But for folks who don't understand how nonprofits work, sometimes churches sort of hide behind their nonprofit status. Oh, we can't do anything political. They just a nonprofit, a 501c3 nonprofit, charitable nonprofit, cannot endorse a candidate, which means they obviously can't advocate for them out front, but mostly it's about money. It's about where you spend your money. So they can't buy campaign signs for a candidate or donate to their campaign, but you can absolutely issue advocate. You can come out specifically on one side of the line for, say, Proposition 8, things like that. There was no reason that a church couldn't come out on a positive side of that. Same, too, with any of the propositions that come out on our ballots. So if you have a charitable nonprofit in your world, whether it's a church or anything else, and they're telling you that they can't advocate for an issue because it's political, they don't know the rules of their own tax status. So you might want to enlighten them. All right, so Karen, we're talking about all the things that are, I guess in some circles, called politically incorrect. And you were cluing us in on the school system and things that were going on there. But I wanted you to get to your 10, what you guys at Capital Resource call the 10 commandments.
Yes, our 10 commandments of effective advocacy, and great job, by the way, of explaining the 501c3. No, we can't, as an organization, endorse candidates, but you have a certain amount of money that you are allowed to use for issue advocacy, and that's whether it's legislation, initiatives, and you're right. Unfortunately, a lot of churches hide behind that idea that, oh, we can't, you know, advocate for that. Oh, yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, a lot of them aren't doing it. But that's one of the things Capital Resource Institute tries to do, educate the church on what they can and can't do and that they need to be standing up, or soon they won't be able to even have free speech in the pulpit. So anyway, I'll get off my little high horse on that one. Okay, 10 commandments of effective advocacy. The first one is know thy legislator. And this is something that it's perfect time right now. Was it Mike and Downing that wanted to go to Sacramento? You can actually get a hold of your legislators in their district right now, and it's important to go do a meet and greet with them and just talk about who you are, what you're interested in, kind of like we did, hey, what's on your legislative calendar, and just get to know them. In addition to that, it's important that you pay attention to things that are going on in the paper that they say, quotes they might have, those kinds of things, so that you get an idea of where they're coming from, what issues are they interested in. One of the questions we asked to every person in the legislature when we did our meet and greet is, what committees are you on? What was your first choice of committees? That tells you a little bit about where that legislator is, what their issues are. Perfect example, I didn't know that Assemblymember Chris Norby was a former history teacher. And he's got a lot of libertarian leanings. And so it was great because there's a bill coming up dealing with history, and we were able to say, oh, really? Well, is this something he'd speak out on? Because he cares about history, and he's got a passion for this idea that they're inserting different things and mandating it, and he's like, hey, as a history teacher, we do things this way, and so he understands it. So it was a great way to go, wow, I know that about him, and now how can we use that to advocate for the things we want? So know your legislator, or know thy legislator. I'll say thy since it's Sunday morning. establish a relationship. That goes back to what we just talked about, a meet and greet, to just let them know. Your first meeting really needs to just be, here's who I am, here are the things we believe. If it's a Republican, I would definitely say you're with the Tea Party. If it's not, I wouldn't. And I share this at all the different events. You can certainly do what you want, but all of you who've been listening, I am a Christian, and I am pro-life, but you will never see me, with exception of Roe v. Wade anniversary, wearing my baby feet, you know, as pro-lifers do, or wearing a cross down at the Capitol. And it's not because I'm denying or hiding the fact that I'm either of those things. Anyone that knows me knows I'm upfront about that. But just like the Tea Party, there are so many misconceptions about them out there that when people, if they know that you're a Tea Partier first and foremost, a wall goes up for some people, and they're not going to listen to you. You already don't have credibility, and so you're kind of set back a few steps in trying to gain credibility just for them to listen to you and listen to your arguments. And it's, you know, it's the same way for the Tea Party. It's the same way if I go testify and I'm wearing a cross. There's people that are automatically tuning me out because I'm one of those Christians that, you know, and then whatever preconceived notions they have. So establish a relationship. Again, you guys are free to do what you want, but I would encourage you, if it's a Democrat, don't wear your Tea Party stuff. If it's a Republican, wear it and let them know you're with the Tea Party. It's just whether or not you're going to be more credible with them. And if your goal really is to be credible and to get them to change their mind and exert political pressure, you need to do it wisely, and I think that's the wisest way to do it. Okay, be prepared. You need to know what you're going to do before you go in there. You need to, you know, if it's a tax issue, then contact some of the tax groups and get your talking points. If it's a bill, you need to know where it is in the process and understand, you know, what you're going in to talk about. And be the one that is the source for them on this information. You want to be more prepared on this issue than anybody else, whatever the issue is. And I have to tell you, it's not that difficult. Often these guys don't read their bills, and I'm not in the habit of defending politicians. But with 2,000 going through on each house, so let's say maybe 4,000 bills a year or close to 4,000 bills a year, how can they read every single bill? Especially if they, you know, I don't expect them to. So you can be the expert on the one bill or two bills you're going in to talk to them about. Tell the truth. It's important that you're not giving them misinformation. It's not information that you heard or you read on a blog. You need to make sure that you tell the truth. If you lose credibility, you won't be able to gain it back. Or by the time you do, term limits, you know, they're up and out of there, and you know, you've wasted all of that time. If for some reason, and I know we're passionate, the Tea Party is very passionate, you know, you get talking about an issue and maybe you misspeak or you exaggerate a bit, it's important that you be the one to go back and correct that. So if you're doing a meet and greet and you're like, yeah, and so-and-so did this or this bill does this, and you go back and you realize, ooh, maybe I misspoke, you just need to be the one to correct it. They'll respect that you cared enough and that they will still trust you. You need to be the source for them, but you need to be a source they can trust. And I will say that Capital Resource Institute has worked very, very hard at doing that. And the issues we deal with, as we've kind of talked about, are controversial. And sometimes there's organizations that use a lot of rhetoric and I think hurt our cause more than help our cause. But CRI is known for being accurate without exaggerating what the unintended consequences might be of a bill. And so that's something that we have actually become quite a source. And I give the example. I personally was the appointment for Congressman McClintock to the state party, and I sat on the initiatives committee. And so we were in committee at the state convention last year, and it was right after session ended for all the legislators. And while we were there taking a break, Senator Huff came up to me and he said, "Hey, Karen, last week there were a couple of bills. I had no idea what they were about, so I just went with your guys' position," because we take formal positions. And that showed that he trusted us enough to blindly go with what we said based on the history he's had with us as an assemblyman, realizing that we tell the truth, we have our facts straight, and that he could trust that, hey, if it was bad, you know, if we said it was bad policy, that was enough for him. Do I wish they all read the bills? Again, yes, but they don't. Know thy opposition. It's important to know what the other side is saying and thinking. And I love this one. Whenever I speak at tea parties, they laugh. But I watch a couple of hours of MSNBC. I have to say, personally, I'm saddened because one of my life goals will not be met, and that was to be Keith Olbermann's worst person in the world. And now my dreams have been, you know, totally crushed over that. Yeah, I have to look for
something
else to
attain. Was he the guy with the thrill up his leg? Is he the guy with the thrill?
I'm sorry, what?
Is he the guy with the thrill up his leg, or was that the other guy?
No, that's Chris Matthews, who I do watch. He's one. Olbermann was too much for me. That was too much. Like,
apparently
that
he
would
was
really
too,
get my blood pressure going.
Apparently he was too much for them, too.
But I do watch. I watch Ed Schultz and Chris Matthews, and I do it for a couple of reasons. I need to know what they're saying. And initially, I'm just screaming at the TV, "You're an idiot," or "You're lying," or "That's not true." But then it seeps in, and I have to think about, well, why are they an idiot? You know, what really is the answer to that? And it helps me formulate arguments when I'm out having regular conversations. I can't just, when somebody repeats something they heard on the mainstream media, I can't just go, "Well, you're an idiot," you know, even though I may be thinking that, or that isn't true. I have to be able to articulate why that's not and why this is a better role for government, or what the truth about that is, and that here's why you heard that, but here is reality, in reality, what Sarah Palin did, or did you know these other groups have these targets as well? Or you know what I'm talking about. So it's important to know thy opposition. And so I watch the other side's cable TV. I pay a lot of attention. We're on Planned Parenthood, all the pro-gay groups. We're on their emails. So we know what they're saying and already can come up with a counter to what their attacks and our arguments are. Any questions from either one of you on what I covered? Usually I've got an audience that I can stop and ask questions for.
Well, you know, Karen, the comment that keeps going through my head as you're talking about knowing your opposition and also being accurate without exaggeration, never lose credibility. As much as we stand on principle, it's all about working smarter, not harder.
Oh, absolutely. And again, you know, it is about that activity is not accomplishment. And so you really need to think about that. And I've got a few more that I've kind of added. And I've traveled around and spoken to a lot of groups and a lot of Tea Party leaders. So I'm getting a feel for, I think I'm getting a feel for what's working, what isn't, where some weaknesses are, where some strengths are. And I, honest to goodness, I don't want to co-opt the Tea Party. I want to equip the Tea Party. And, you know, you do need to work smarter, not harder. And it is such an opportunity right now. You know, a lot of people think, oh, well, how come California, the Tea Party didn't carry over? I'm not really all that concerned or surprised. We are a much larger state, and it is going to take more time to educate, communicate, and equip our grassroots Tea Party than other states. It's in a very expensive state to travel around in. Most of my work has been done in Northern California. I'm working with Dawn on doing a Southern California tour. And it's not just me. I'm just saying in general, it's more difficult. You can't just, I mean, you're talking about going to the Capitol and having, you know, what kind of a thing that is to get a whole group of people. We're not like other states where our Capitol's 2 hours away. Mm-hmm. Our Capitol's 5 hours away for some people. It's 8 hours, 10 hours away from others. And so it's just not the same. So I'm encouraged. I believe that the Tea Party in California is just starting to gain its steam. And for the people that, you know, in my meet and greets, people, some legislators, oh, well, I'm concerned they're going to fade away, or I'm concerned about that they're just doing rallies. I share with them, you know, I'm encouraged. I see the energy and the groups growing, and I also see them having a real desire to learn. So it is, you know, work smarter, and I'm hoping to help people do that just based on, I feel like I was, you know, where a lot of the Tea Party citizens were. Okay, I'm upset, don't know what to do, how do I do it? So I've made a lot of mistakes, and hoping that I can help take that energy and turn it into effective action. So,
but see, one of the big things, Karen, is that you have people out there, and I watched it in the primary, and I watched it during the general election. And I heard so many Tea Parties around the state. Up here, we really focused on winning. You know, the idea of winning, not perfection. Perfection isn't the goal. And unfortunately, a lot of the Tea Party groups got caught in perfection. You know, some of the candidates weren't perfect enough for them, so they voted for people who were going to get 1% of the vote, mm-hmm. because that's their voting, their conscience. And it's kind of like, okay, at some point, your conscience is like the rubber that never meets the road. When you continue to vote for people that really aren't getting anywhere. I mean, this is going to take a while before you have candidates that, I mean, you're always going to have people that are flawed. Bottom line is they're flawed, but was it better than the alternative? And people go, oh, you're voting for the lesser of two evils. And I'm thinking, really? So when you married your husband or your wife, that was because they were perfect? You know, no, it was because they were less screwed up than other people.
Topic because, well, as some people know, I ran for lieutenant governor. There is a line in the sand at some point, but it's funny because we debate this in our office all the time. We have one employee that the lesser of two evils is still evil and would never, and I just say, hey, Jesus isn't going to be on the ballot.
Exactly.
So vote for Jesus. I mean, these are debates that, you know, have gone on, will continue to go on. I mean, our office has them. We are, you know, I chose not to vote for Meg Whitman, and I never voted for Arnold. However, there are others where that line in the sand, I kind of go, you know, we all have a line in the sand. It's at a different place. And, but you're right. We aren't going to have them perfect, and we aren't, but that's an interesting debate, and I have to tell you, I have people that would not chase me out, but come out after me and go, hey, what do you think of the whole Meg Whitman this? Or some people want to go with Abel, what's your argument for you? And I get that. I understand that dilemma. I've been there so many times, and I change at different times as to, you know, what I'm going to do. And so anyway, that's just an interesting thing. But, yeah, we're not going to have perfect candidates. We still need to win. You need to be on the inside rather on the outside, and that's something to really consider that, hey, if we really want to change, at some level you have to be on the inside, but not at the expense of giving up your principles. I mean, again, there is a line in the sand for everybody, and that just happens to be different, But we aren't going to ever have a perfect candidate. Like I tell my friend, you know, Jesus isn't on the ballot. So until he is, you know, you aren't going to find someone that's going to be perfect.
And Karen, and
you know,
so
the comment is, hey, the lesser of two evils is still evil.
You know, and in so many ways.
Anyway, it's a debate I love having, and it usually it varies depending on the candidate. But it'll be interesting going into 2012 with all of that.
Well, and Karen, in so many ways, I think what people need to remember is that this is a very long-term process, and while you're maintaining your principles and your conscience, you kind of have to treat this like a business. You know, you've got an end result down the road, and if you really want to get there, you have to do the logical steps that are going to get you there.
Well, when Sam Paredes came up,
you have to have a strategy, and I will get to one of the commandments is persevere, and I say this is a marathon, not a sprint. It really is. And you have to look at it like that, and you have to pace yourself, and you have to choose your battles in that. And so you do. Absolutely. The other side has been at this a long, long time. And the Tea Party and America is just waking up to the fact that these guys have been community organizers and organizing to take our country away for a long time, and it's not going to happen overnight. And so you do. You've got to be strategic about it. And kind of some of the commandments that I go into, I'll talk about that a little more. But again, it's a debate. I love having the debate, and it is an interesting one, and it really depends. I kind of change my mind or change where I'm at depending on the candidate. I mean, I chose not to... I take other things into consideration, too. I am personally active in the party, and I think Arnold did so much to hurt the party and what supposedly the party stands for that I just thought Meg was going to do the same thing. So, again, I don't want to get in the debate with any of your listeners over why I voted the way I did, but I think that the blame needs to be on the Democrats right now from a partisan standpoint because they are the problem, but Arnold was the problem, too, and he was a Republican, so... Anyway.
Yeah, the problem is still the problem. It really doesn't matter what letter they have behind their name.
Absolutely. So, believe in what you're advocating is the next commandment, and that is crucial. Obviously, everyone's passionate that's involved in the Tea Party. You need to believe in it, and you need to be consistent. And this goes back to the idea of being consistent with, you know, the Ronald Reagan and your view of government. And a lot of times things sound like a really good idea, but if you're not consistent in what you believe, you start to lose credibility. If it's dealing with, you know, it's interesting, we're opposing the helmet law. And I got an email from someone, there's a law that passed last year, but it was tied to another bill, and although... it didn't take effect, and it's mandating that our minors wear helmets on the ski slopes when they're skiing and snowboarding. And I oppose that. I believe it's a parental right. I don't need the government to tell my child if they're going to be on the bunny hill for two runs. They have to wear a helmet. I can decide that, and I get to make that choice. And so I had someone respond to our email, and I'm sure you guys get this too, that tell you all sorts of ideas about how you should really be doing things. And so anyway, he sent an email saying, oh, there are other battles you need to die on. Well, first of all, I'm not dying on this, but second of all, this is a fundamental thing. If I consistently believe the role of parents belongs in one arena and the role of government is over here, and they're not supposed to cross over and intrude in the role of parents, then that's consistent with that. And as I talked with a few people who originally liked the idea, I said, okay, well, where does that stop? Why is... Oh, well, because it's going to affect health care. Okay, so then why aren't they mandating dental appointments? And why aren't they mandating, are they going to mandate what they eat? Because that affects health care. And you start going down that road with them, be consistent with your thinking, and they realize, wow, this isn't consistent what I believe the role of government is. But you have to walk them down that. And so it's important that you're consistent and you really think about this and you don't make an exception that, oh, this is a feel-good, so I'm going to go with it. No, ultimately, is this constitutional? Is this the proper role of government? And believe in it and be consistent, because you'll lose credibility if you're not consistent. Communicate effectively, and this is an important one. I think emotional stories are really great, and passion is great, but I will be the first to share that I've been too emotional at times, like when I called Nancy Pelosi's office the night of the healthcare passage. And, you know, I just said the most stupid things, and I was all emotional, and I thought, wow, if the FBI is going to be tracing me, I don't want it to be for that stupid phone call. I want it to be on something more articulate. And so it was kind of, I didn't practice what I preach, but it's important that you communicate effectively. You don't bring in too many issues or too much emotion, and we're mad about so much and frustrated about so much intrusion that we need to make sure we're staying on point when we communicate, whether it's in a letter to the editor or a meeting or a committee hearing. How many of you have seen the YouTube video? Well, how many of you? There's two of you on the radio. But if you're out there listening, raise your hand. The YouTube video of the gal speaking about the mosque in Temecula.
I don't know. What'd she say? I guess I a lot of times I don't notice.
She was not communicating effectively. I posted on my Facebook as a way not to. She was very emotional, didn't make sense. Who knows what her point was, but she just came across. They just laughed at her for 6 minutes. You don't want that to happen. And I'm sure she was passionate and had probably some good points, but she blew her entire 6 minutes, and now it's a YouTube where everyone's laughing. You need to communicate effectively. She had the passion, but she was all over the place and didn't have any real cohesive point. You should look it up on YouTube. It's quite hilarious. Negotiate when necessary. And this is where we kind of like, you know, we need to be strategic and smart. And I would say you never negotiate away your principles. And I give these stories. There was a bill where in Southern California there was a men's polo team in those adorable little swimsuits some of those men wear, and someone took pictures of them. A perv was in the audience and took pictures and put them up on a perv website. And so the legislator introduced a bill saying that before any pictures of these minors could be put up, that the parent or the minor needed to sign off on them. Well, it was a Republican carrying the bill, so we called and said, hey, we're going to oppose this. And they were, you know, shocked. How could we oppose it? Well, you're giving the minor rights that belong to the parent. My 14-year-old doesn't get to sign off on perv pictures going up on a website, no matter who took them. And, you know, if we believe that the parents, you know, that the minors aren't emancipated and don't have full-strength rights to privacy, then that goes with that thinking. And they said, oh, well, no, we agree. And they can't even enter a contract, so it's not a big deal. Well, no, it is a big deal. You're putting it in this bill, and you're wanting me to support it, and I can't. I can't support language that says the minor can sign off on these pictures. So we went round and round, and they said, okay, we'll change it for the next after the next committee hearing. Well, they didn't change it. We called them up and said, you know what, you have 48 hours, or we're going to do an email blast saying you're undermining parental rights. They changed it. They knew that was going to be a problem. And so they ended up changing it. Now, another time we negotiated and gave in to the ACLU when they wanted something. We were sponsoring a bill. They wanted a sentence clarifying that we weren't trying to do something sneaky, which we weren't. So we said, okay, we'll clarify that we're not doing this. And they withdrew their opposition. So as much as I hated to, you know, give in to the ACLU, it didn't affect the core principle or the core issue that I was working on. And so, you know, that was a time where negotiating got them to pull off their opposition. Persevere. This goes to the idea of it's a marathon, not a sprint. We need to be in it for the long haul. And this also goes back to when you're persevering, that means using your time wisely and saying no to certain things. You need to choose your battles. And I know, because I'm on a lot of the different group lists, whether it's your local group, depending on how you work it, you can't get involved in every single battle. You need to, whether it's come up with a mission statement or split your group up, depending on what issues people are going to track, you will get burned out so fast, which is why I recommend, like on the school board stuff, get the agendas at home. Get them. You don't need to go, you know, spend all those hours at a school board meeting if nothing controversial is going on. Use the time you're going to go to a school board meeting when you as a Tea Party are working at getting a policy passed. But don't go sit there just to waste your time and sit through the pontificating of these local electeds. And so you need to choose your battles in order to persevere through all of this. You cannot get involved in every single little issue. And that means, I mean, I can't tell you there are a couple different, and there are specific people, but they're burning me out with their emails, you know, oh, Obama's birth certificate, and then this, and then that. You want a battle that you can win, and you want a battle where you can make it, and if you can't win, that you can make a difference by articulating your point of view, because it's not just about winning. You know, you also sometimes do things in order to educate the public and move the issue forward. So by no means is it about winning, but you need to choose these battles. You can't just get engaged in every single thing. You cannot, or I wouldn't recommend, emailing your legislator over every single bill you don't like you see in the legislature. You've got to have some parameters, because you're going to irritate the legislator to the point where they're not going to find you credible, and you're going to burn out your list. And you guys, as leaders and other leaders, you need to take your responsibility, and I'm not implying you don't, but you need to take it very seriously that you've been put in a position over leadership, and you can't burn them out. You're to educate, motivate, and not, you know, overtire them with emails over every issue that bothers you, because there's a lot of them out there. I could sit all day long and do federal stuff and state stuff. So you need to choose, you know, really choose your battles. And it may mean letting some things go. But if you let them go, it's because you're going to be effective and win on another issue. And by win, I mean it could be that you're going to educate and bring the issue forward. It doesn't mean you're going to, you know, win the bill. And so I think choose your battles is a critical one as I travel around to the Tea Party. Because there's so many out there. People are so passionate, so new, some of them that are coming into it, and you need, as leaders, to help them harness that and put it so that it's effective. And that's probably one of the things that I see with some people in general in the movement, especially when they're new, is you need to really choose your battles. And then last but not least is to thank them, to make sure, even if you don't agree with them, that you're, you know, sending a thank you note. That goes back to this whole idea of, you know, establishing a relationship, keeping the lines of communication open, because you never know when you're going to agree with a legislator on something. I know we're supporting some bills this year on sex trafficking and human trafficking, where we're going to agree with, you know, the Democrats, some pretty liberal Democrats that we're usually disagreeing with on a lot of issues. But we have a common goal, and that is to stop the sex slave trade, and we're going to work with them on the legislation that does that. So questions, comments, debate, please disagree with me on something.
Well, I had a comment about what you just said about sometimes you're going to agree and sometimes you're not. We recently had an issue here in Reading where another Tea Party group formed an alliance with the ACLU regarding our library and freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. And I won't go into those details, but we brought in the ACLU to our meeting so that they could educate us on the issue. And there were some people that hesitated a little bit and questioned, well, why would you want them here? And the fact of the matter is do we agree with every single thing that they're doing? No. But are we going to come to an agreement on some issues? Absolutely. In case in point, the gentleman that we brought in from the ACLU is a personal friend of mine, and he's probably a little bit liberal, and I know I'm conservative, but he is a friend outside of our political beliefs. And every single time I go to vote at my voting location, he's there volunteering for a 15-hour shift. So never close the doors. You don't know where you're going to come together.
Right. I would say that also goes to know thy opposition. I have to say, I have probably a good idea, and I probably don't agree with what the other Tea Party did, and I would articulate probably a different point of view when it comes to library funds, free speech, freedom of assembly. Unless it was, can you tell me what the issue is? Because now I'm curious.
Aaron?
They were setting up a display out front. They wanted to hand out pocket constitutions on Constitution Day. And it turns out there were two groups there, and the library, I guess, wanted them to sit in a certain area, wanted them to put a table in a certain area, and didn't want them, chasing people down on their way into the door, didn't want them to put things on anyone's vehicle out in the parking lot. And I wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what happened.
Our issue.
Yeah, I don't know what happened
so
at the time.
Basically, the ACLU was agreeing with the Tea Party.
Correct. Their whole thing was there shouldn't be... The library then said, well, okay, if it was a problem, we better make some guidelines. Well, then their guidelines were you can have a 30-foot table with only six chairs behind it, that kind of thing. And the ACLU said, nope, it's a public area. They can do what, you know, they can hand out what they want. Of course, they can't harass anybody or force them to take anything. But the idea that they have to sit at a table in a certain location on public property is restriction of freedom of speech.
Oh, that's great, and I'm glad to see the ACLU, when it came to the Constitution and the Tea Party, you know, a lot of times the criticism is that they won't get involved, they really, you know, don't get involved, and I would probably argue, I would lean on that side, that they don't get involved when it comes to conservative issues as much as I would like to see them when it comes to civil rights. So I'm glad they did that. That's a great
thing.
And again, that goes back to educating the group, and you know what? Then if you don't agree with the ACLU, use that as an opportunity to get to know the opposition. Ask them some of the, you know, again, they're your guests, so you have to be careful, but ask them a couple of the questions about the things you disagree with and get to know what they're thinking and open up a dialogue. So I think those are important things to do,
and
if it's with the ACLU.
And whether or not we get involved in this issue, the point is that those doors have been opened.
Yeah, I just
absolutely.
I just got an email the other day that one of the judges from the, I'd have to look, but the something circuit, was it Ninth Circuit?
I think they're the ones always causing trouble.
Yeah, I think it was the hotbed Ninth Circuit. Anyway, it was a judge was coming to our local area, and so they said, oh, I thought you might want this. Well, I wouldn't normally have been getting emails necessarily from the ACLU, but, you know, when you get right down to it, it's easy to be angry at things, you know, 3,000 miles away in Washington, D.C., but all the action happens in your local town. And so if you go outside your door and you want to be involved, like you were talking about choosing your battles, and we've always referred to it as people using us like the mobile army, and they use you like the mobile army as well because they know that if you start sending out email blasts, that things happen. And they know that if they call us and we show up, things happen. So we have to be really careful that we don't wind up being the mobile army because we completely lose all of our effectiveness. It's like, oh, it's them again.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't want to be, oh, it's them again.
You do in a good way. But, yeah, you're right. And that's why I was saying, hey, choose your battles. You can't, you know, be engaged in every single thing, you know, and die on every single hill. You need to pick what those, you know, things are, and again, that's a really important thing, and at CRI, and I've shared this, and we just started going over this because, as I said, the bills are being introduced, but it's hard because, you know, I have a tendency to, ooh, I'll help that group over there, even though it's not my issue, let's send out an email. For us, what we've done is we have this sheet of paper that talks about the different criteria for a bill, and we categorize our legislation. And, I mean, groups could do this by issue or by, you know, what body is going to be your number one priority, like the state, federal, school board, or however that is. But we literally go through, and my legislative director will go through, and we have some questions that need to be answered before a bill is considered an A priority for CRI, and then a B priority, and then a C priority. And an A priority are things like when faith and public policy intersect, violation of, you know, certain rights, constitutional rights. And so if it falls under A, we then have everything that we do as an organization for A. A means that we will testify at a committee hearing, that we will do a special email, that we will do a press release, that we will go on record over in the Capitol as opposing or supporting the bill. And there's all of these things. And that helps us stay focused on our battle and our primary battle. And, you know, that helps when I'm wanting to, you know, get involved in something else. You know, Paulo can say to me, hey, Karen, it really doesn't fall under this. And either I can argue and say why this is an exception to that, or it's like, you're right, I'm not choosing my battles, you know, and staying true to our mission, and I'm going to burn our people out. Because there's enough out there on our plate that is what we're wanting to follow, that could burn us out without adding anything, because it's a big assault on our state and our constitution out there. So that helps us stay focused to have that ahead of time and to make sure things fit in with that before we move forward, because then when stuff starts to hit, it's like, okay, we've already, you know, we've gone through that this isn't a priority, and this is why it's not a priority. So
now, Karen,
I don't know if that helps, but
it does.
Maybe coming up with a mission statement or deciding as an organization, okay, what issues are going to be most important to us, and then, you know, okay, is city council going to be our number one, or is it going to be the state legislature, or equal between federal and state, you know, whatever it is.
Now, Karen, I've got a question. Given all of your history with this organization and all that you've learned and all that you've accomplished, once we've been able to equip people with, for instance, your Ten Commandments, what kind of success rate do you generally see? And I know that may be hard to quantify, but what kind of successes are people experiencing?
Well, it is hard to quantify because we are just starting to get engaged, and it also it does require participating in elections as well, because who's building, and I work primarily in Sacramento, so it affects how things are going to happen. But I can tell you, and this took a lot of time and energy, but we were very, when you do it right, and when, you know, everything is working correctly with advocacy, and you really do it right, you have a huge impact. And I used the mandatory HPV bill that they wanted to mandate for minors before they entered school, from as young as 11 and 12, having our girls having a mandatory HPV booster, and actually it would have been 3.
And what does that mean?
And lots of problems with that, but the biggest one is mandating immunization for a sexually transmitted disease, and all of the questions around the newness of the drug, and lots of deaths and more that are coming out surrounding this immunization. But we had Republicans that were co-sponsors of this bill, and all of the Democrats on board. So this is a perfect example of where we should have not been able to win this, because they had all the numbers, but we did such a good job of bringing others together that applied political pressure, educating the public and the media. You know, in California, you've got to make the media or get media on your side on issues, even if you have to go to maybe some of the more national groups and local talk radio, getting the media on your side, because it is such a large state. It helps if you can get some earned media. But we were able to stop this bill, but it was total, you know, all the rules I followed, from building relationships with legislators to knowing the opposition and what they were saying, not burning our people out, but being really effective in our message. And those were all huge things, and we won it. We won it on the floor against Republicans and Democrats. Doug LaMalfa was key in this. Doug LaMalfa, Joel Anderson, and Mimi Walters, and Audra Strickland were key in battling this. I would be watching floor session, hear an argument and fax over counter-arguments to an office for them to run down to their, you know, person on the floor that, hey, that isn't true. Here's the truth about that. And we won it. And that was a huge victory that affects hundreds of thousands of people. Not mandating HPV for all of our kids. And so it really can be effective when done right.
That's awesome. And there are, the schools don't send, I mean, I know you guys do a lot of parent advocacy things, and the schools do things all the time because of state laws that parents have never even heard of, correct?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
How do they follow? I know you got at your website, you can sign up for a, you know, an update, and you guys send out really good updates. So I would encourage people. You are, I'm not looking at it, CRI.org, yes?
CapitalResource.org.
CapitalResource.org.
And we also, I don't think that you've been on long enough to see any of our action alerts, but when the legislation starts coming through or something's going on in a school district, we send out action alerts. Like, we will send out alerts that say, this bill is going to be heard next Monday. Here are the people you need to call to tell them, no, you don't want it. And so, and we cover more than just, you know, abortion and, you know, the gay agenda. So, I think that your, listeners, a lot of what we do, they will be interested in. Plus, what we cover weekly is not just those issues. We cover everything kind of culturally that's going around the state and the nation. And so, we send out those alerts. Really, we think of it in terms of most conservatives are actually raising their families and not professional activists. We actually have lives, and we know that. So we try and do the research and try and send you the stuff. Now, you and I, I'm sure all three of us are news junkies, but not everyone out there is. And so we try and kind of summarize different things that we feel like they should know about. But unless they're, you know, looking at every single cable show and surfing the web on all sorts of, you know, Politico and, you know, all the different emails, that possibly they wouldn't catch this news. So
absolutely,
we send that out weekly, and then we do the action alerts, special policy pieces, and it's a great way to stay informed.
Well, you know, on our local level, Sally Raposa creates an action alert every Monday night for our volunteers when they come to the meetings. And the second they walk in the door, they get a quarter sheet of paper with a specific thing that they can actually do.
That is great. More tea parties need to be, I think, doing that. More groups need to be doing it, not just tea parties, need to be doing it. I would also encourage you to always have cards there, and if nothing else, you're sending a note to a legislator or something, and maybe it's a different focus every week, but some sort of card or letter to the editor, and one or two people sends a note. Hey, heard about this bill on the radio. Please oppose it, Senator LaMalfa. Or, Senator LaMalfa, thank you for the job you're doing. And it can be done right then and there while they're sitting there, you know, waiting for the next speaker.
We do a lot of things like that. Sometimes the action alert is a list of issues on a topic, and then we give them... we'll do like an addressed letter. It'll have the legislator's name, every, you know, all the things on a regular letter, and at the bottom, please respond with a written reply, and then their name and their address and stuff. And in the middle is the part they fill in. And
oh, that is great.
Yeah. So then there's a set of talking points. So that way we're not sending in canned letters. People are putting in their own opinions, but we're making it really, really user friendly. People can turn those in, and they get mailed in bulk. So, you know, you're not expecting people to go home and remember to do it and mail it and da-da-da-da. I mean, it has
to
be
easy. And it ends up in the trash can like my lobby packet.
Yeah.
That is great. That is huge. And I will tell you that these guys do track what comes into their office. They do have piles of yeses and noes on bills. And so it does make a difference.
Well, with your updates that come out, my sister is in the Bay Area. She teaches at a private school, and she follows all of these types of social issues, but doesn't necessarily have time to follow them closely. So whenever I get your action alerts, I send them to her, and I send them to my other sister in Sacramento. And that's kind of how they stay up on that. I mean, you've become the expert place for family and social issues. So when they see that I'm sending them a capital resource thing, I always get a reply back that says, oh my gosh, I didn't know about that. I need to tell my friends.
Oh, that's great. And that's what we do. And that's why we're here and are going to continue. And so I want to encourage your listeners, if there's an issue, I mean, go to our website. You can email me through our website, which, by the way, we're in the middle of redoing, and it will launch on March 15th at Lobby Day, our new website.
Nice.
So I want to encourage people to pay attention to that. And it's going to be much more, have a lot more information on it. So I'm excited about kind of some changes coming for us and being able to better equip the grassroots.
Well, a lot of times people think they want their relatives or friends or whatever to be more plugged in. But what happens is they barrage them with a million zillion issues and things and links and blah, 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 that people just start to tune you out, like you were talking about earlier. I would encourage people to look at their list of contacts, whether they're family or friends or coworkers, and ask them, would you like me to keep you up to speed on some of these things? And then look for the alerts that have, or your newsletters. Your newsletters are great, too. The ones that have issues that they care about, and then forward them. I mean, it's a, you know, obviously they could subscribe to their own stuff, but if you're interested in being an activist and you don't want to run around, you know, chaining yourself to trees or doors or whatever it is they do, you know, that's our kind of activism, is to keep other people informed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And Karen,
that is so key. And I'm really looking forward to coming and speaking to your group, and I've heard so many great things about it. So I'm very much looking forward to meeting everybody. I've met you guys, but meeting everyone else, and so hopefully they're getting ready with a long list of questions, and that it'll be a productive time, because that's what I want for your people. I want it to be a productive time where they walk away with information that is relevant for them.
Well, Karen, I personally can't begin to thank you enough for, you know, not only being on the radio this morning, but for everything that you do. And we're extremely excited about you coming to Reading to talk to our members, because, again, you started at the same level that they're starting at, and they'll be able to relate to you, and your humor certainly doesn't hurt. So your ability to reach people is absolutely fabulous, and I think it's going to be extremely well received.
Well, thank you. I'm excited, and I'll try and think of some new stories, since you guys have had to sit through all my stories. I'll try and think of some other, I'll think really hard so I can add something new for you guys.
So we're coming up on about 3 minutes before the close of the show. Anything you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, I want to encourage them to go to our website, capitalresource.org, and then one of the things that we haven't talked about, but I certainly want you guys to be paying attention to in the Tea Party, because I think youth are really important. We just set our dates for our City on the Hill Youth Leadership Conference, which is coming up, and it is a week-long camp where kids are ages 14 to 18 are actually legislators. We spend the night, we used to do it at UC Davis, but now we're doing it at William Jessup University. So I want people to check out our City on the Hill program, which equips the youth of the day to articulate and talk about the issues. And we have been doing it for 24 years. Assemblywoman Audra Strickland went through it as a 14 and 15-year-old, and she was then an assemblywoman, the youngest at the time. And so it's something that doesn't get a lot of, we don't talk about a lot, but it's something that there are any youth out there, parents, grandparents, they need to look into that that program and send their kids for them to learn not just the legislative process, but how to articulate conservative values, going back into public school and, you know, talking about these issues from a credible standpoint. Last year, we actually had Steve Greenhut. We did a whole panel on what the different parties believe, and we had a Democrat. He was our Libertarian, and a Republican. Talk about, well, what is it the different parties believe on different issues, and let them debate it and let the kids hear what these guys think the role of government is from a party standpoint. And so anyway, we do a lot of speakers. They actually carry legislation that is currently going through the legislature, and they have to debate them. We end the day Saturday on the floor of the Assembly and Senate, and they are legislators that get to stand up at the legislator's desk and advocate for their bill, whether it's a liberal or a conservative bill. So anyway, just check out City on the Hill. That's a program that is great if any of you have youth and are interested in equipping them for the future.
For those people that are trying to jot down all this stuff, or they're running out the door like Karen to go to church, if you go to readingteaparty.com, click on radio show, you'll see today's program, and in there is the link for City on the Hill. So we're adding links as Karen's been talking today. We've been messaging back the guy that puts together our web page there, and Robert's been adding things. So for all those of you that are going, I didn't have a pen, go to readingteaparty.com, click on radio show, it's all right there. All right, Karen, we're going to let you go to church, and
okay.
We're going to thank you, and we will see you in a little bit, a couple of few weeks, and
okay.
Thanks
hey,
for all
you,
your good
guys.
Work. Bye, Karen. Thanks a lot. For those people who want to learn how to lobby, or you want to just see it in action, you just want to tag along, you can join us at the Capitol with the Capitol Resource Institute on March 15th. Mark your calendar.
And again, Monday night, join us at the Reading Tea Party, 6 o'clock, Bonneview Baptist Church.
And if you don't live in Reading, go to the Reading Tea Party website, click on locations, look for a town near you. If you want to log in and you don't want, I had somebody on the website here that didn't want to actually log in and create a login, you can use guest, G-U-E-S-T, at readingteaparty.com as an email, and guest as a password. So you can get in however you'd like. And if you have problems with that, give us a call. Phone number's on the front of the page. So we will get back to you next week with a brand new program. And you're listening to We the People on KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Reading, home of Free Fire Media.